Sounds like a fun evening in your home, Joyce.
And, you know, and that's the other issue is, are your standards the same as your spouse's?
No, I mean, generally, no. Not when it comes to child rearing, generally, they're a little different.
Welcome to Classical Etc. You're in the studio with Memoria Press.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Classical Etc. I'm Jessica Gardner, and I am joined today by Paul, Tanya, and Martin. Welcome back, everyone. It's been a couple episodes since we've had the normal bunch.
That's true. I feel like I'm sitting in Carol Reynolds' chair. Yeah. It makes me feel like I should talk a lot.
And talk very quickly.
Yes, I shouldn't have said that because she's listening probably. Sorry,
I'm just
Carol.
I'm glad to be called normal for a change.
Oh.
Last time, Tanya was upset about being called normal.
That's right. I do not want to be called normal. That just sounds average.
I'll work on it. On today's episode, we are discussing parental involvement. How involved should you be as a parent? And what should your guiding principles be with that involvement? Before we talk about that, as always, what we're reading. Martin, let's start with you.
Well, okay, so I'm reading, I normally talk about my recreational reading. Mm-hmm. That hasn't changed much. I'm about to finish The Conquering Tide by Ian Tolles about the war in the Pacific, which is interesting because I did not realize that that war was pretty much determined pretty early in the war. Our manufacturing base was pumping out carriers and airplanes, and we had improved our airplanes so that ours weren't inferior to the Japanese Zeros, you know, and then it was just a matter of time. I mean, after early 1943. So that was kind of interesting.
And not then, to me.
War books. I love war books. Death Comes with the Archbishop. I'm starting to getting close to finishing that. That's Willa Cather, of course, in a great little book. But I'm actually reading a couple of books to prepare for my two summer courses, Intro to Classical Education and Classical Pedagogy at memoriacollege.org this summer. And one of those is, I try to read, particularly for my classical education, philosophy of classical education course, the first one, I try to read one new book that I haven't read on classical education every year. So the one I'm reading right now is The Classical Tradition by Gilbert Hyatt. Gilbert Hyatt was the one who translated the Werner Jaeger Paideia series of three or four books that are really among the greatest things ever written, I think, on classical education. And he was a great classical scholar in his own right. And so I'm really enjoying that. And I'm also, for my pedagogy class, I never really have finished, you know, read really far into Quintilian. But that is so, Quintilian, who is a Roman teacher and writer on oratory and rhetoric and just education. So his institutes of oratory are just filled with a lot of just common sense, practical things about how to teach children. He talks about phonics in there. Okay, this is like first, second century, somewhere around there.
Do you have a book for that? Or
it's the Institutes of Oratory.
It's actually printed.
Yeah,
published?
The Loeb. I'm sure you can probably find it other places.
I was thinking, why don't we publish that?
Well, you would want to edit it.
Oh,
okay. Let me put it that way.
Okay.
I mean, you want to edit me, and my writing's like perfect.
Is Quintilian not in the great books at all?
It's the. Oh, yeah. It's in the great tradition. There's
no. Yeah, but no, Quintilian. No, I mean, series
you mean
of great,
in
the great
the series?
Books.
I think he is.
I don't know. Sure. I don't remember seeing Quintilian on any of those books, but maybe we can
I don't know.
We need to look.
Let's check.
But, I mean, he talks about teaching kids writing and why this is important and, you know, just really great stuff. So I'm, you know, making my way further into that than I have in previous years. So I'm enjoying those.
Nice. Paul?
Well, I picked up Orthodoxy the other day. Got a couple chapters into that.
It makes you more educated just picking it up, doesn't it?
That hasn't worked for me yet.
Yes, but I did fairly well just skim and skip over the introduction in the version that I had. I didn't feel like it was, you know, I should spend a lot of time there.
I think that, I think Orthodoxy, oh, it's Martin's introduction. I think Orthodoxy is a book that we, you know how Lee made us read Lord of the Rings and Narnia last year? Mm-hmm. I think we should do Orthodoxy together.
Hmm. Well, I'm already ahead of you, apparently, then, I guess.
No, I think, but you're doing it by yourself.
I am doing it by myself. Yeah,
but I think it would be helpful
for
all of us in the office to read and discuss that.
It is a difficult
book. It's so difficult.
Book, because for one, he's being very sarcastic throughout, mm-hmm. and lots of plays on words.
And you really need the context
paradoxes
of why he's,
right.
that he's writing. What I missed is when I started it, I just didn't realize that he was writing in response to something. Mm-hmm. And so it was harder for me than it should have been.
He'd written a book called Heretics before he wrote Orthodoxy, which was basically, he just goes through and criticizes all the great thinkers of the time, which is, and it's, I think it's just as good as Orthodoxy, really. But then somebody challenges him. Well, okay, mm-hmm. you've told us all the people you disagree with. Now, why don't you outline your own philosophy?
Right.
So he writes Orthodoxy.
Right. And I mean, he's referring to contemporaries, and be nice to have footnotes that kind of explain that a little more.
Well, we could add them.
Yeah.
He's writing in Edwardian England after, you know, there were a couple King Edwards that were both the sons of Queen Victoria. So he's writing really after the Victorian time. And things were just different back then. And I think you really do need a context mm-hmm. to kind of understand what's going on.
I do too. Yeah. I think it would help me a lot to have the context.
And you also, I think, you really need to read C.S. Lewis before and kind of master his writing before you read Chesterton. I think it's a good gateway to Chesterton.
Right. I can see that.
Too. Fundamentally, you're saying Chesterton's a little harder to read.
Mm. For me, he's more literary. Mere Christianity is radio addresses during World War II.
It's very clear.
Very clear. He's a master of clarity. Chesterton, that's a quote by Richard Brookhiser, and he says, Chesterton addresses a crowd or a rally. Lewis addresses you. Chesterton charts the world. Lewis grasps your lapel. And I think that encompasses, I think, they're two different styles.
Yeah. Mm. Mm. Tanya?
I'm reading Middlemarch. Mm. I'm 200 pages in. So it's a much faster read than War and Peace was. But it's a lot of pages, but they're smaller, you know, they're regular size pages, whereas War and Peace was like this huge, it was like a missile from the Catholic Church or the big Bibles in churches.
Yeah.
Lots of words on a page. And it took forever to change pages because there were so many words on a page. And Middlemarch is your normal sized book. So,
you know, but I got actually encouraged in reading War and Peace because there are so many words on a page because you only had to flip like one page and you'd be on a new chapter.
That's true.
So like
very short chapters. Yes.
It felt like you were getting somewhere.
Yes, that's true. I see that. And I'm also reading Rallying the Really Human Things by Vegan Gororian because we are getting ready to publish it, which I understand we want done before the conference. So we've got to get on it.
I need to start reading that.
Yes, you do.
Yes. Well, on to today's topic, the role of parents in classical education. And Tanya, I want to start with you. If a new homeschooling parent came up to you and said, what am I getting into? How can I prepare to make homeschooling a success? Where would you start to help them estimate what they need to be ready for?
That can be very overwhelming, mm-hmm. you know, to think. I remember being really overwhelmed by the thought that I would possibly homeschool. And so you all can go because I can talk about this for an hour. I have many, many things to say.
Okay, well.
She really has things to say, Martin.
I think for one thing, one important thing is to find a mentor, to find somebody who's done it, who's doing it, somebody who can meet you where you are and can always and can hold your hand through it. And another thing would be, you know, that the important thing for me, I knew why I was homeschooling, and it was because I have a very specific incident in the public school where we lived. I just read a newspaper article in our local newspaper that said that a third of the third graders couldn't read. And so I decided I was not going to put my child in that school. So I knew, but I'd never considered homeschooling before that. It was literally just put my child in that school where they're obviously not teaching, or homeschool. That was my only choice. And so I feel like you've got to know why you're doing it. You've got to be able to defend it. And I knew why I was doing it, but I wasn't able to defend it well. So I think when Cheryl handed me Climbing Parnassus, when I listened to her talk, she was my mentor, about education, and I learned so much, but I do think that's part of it. Mm-hmm. But the easy part is pick a curriculum like ours, where we've done all the work for you, where we have not all the work. You still have to do a lot of work, but we've at least laid it out for you. Mm-hmm. And then read your child's curriculum. Just read it. Read through everything that you're going to be teaching. I don't mean do the study guides, though that would be optimal, but who has time for that, right? But read the novels, read the history books, especially if you've got young children. It's just not going to take all that. And then you'll feel so much more confident and so much better. Take a Memoria Academy adult class this summer and actually learn a Latin course or learn how to teach classical composition. And then eventually, the Memoria College classes can also, like Martin was talking about his introduction to pedagogy and classical education. If you're going to go that route, anything like that is going to make you feel more confident. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to quit talking because I'm dominating.
I would, this idea of a home base, curriculum. A complete curriculum package. I have always said, even before we had our own, that, you know, you have to have home base. You have to have, you know, we didn't have the curricula, the packages, but we had the various pieces of the package they could put together. Now they're put together for you. But I if you're a new homeschooler and you have never done it before and you don't have teaching experience or whatever, you really badly need a home base like that, packaged curriculum, if you can.
Cheryl used to talk about it. You know, when she decided to homeschool and she found a company that had one package and it was a way for her to start. I mean, it really is important. I think that's what gave her the model of wanting to do this.
That's like we do the same thing for our teachers inside an institutionalized classroom the first couple of years, they have to teach the curriculum exactly like it is. They have to teach from the study guides. They have to do everything we tell them to do. Basically, you have to earn your stripes, earn the right to start maybe being a little more free with what you're doing in your classroom.
Almost like music. You know, you memorize it and then you can embellish.
And then that's right. And then you can start improvising. Yes.
Yeah. And it's not another way to look at it is not so much as earning, but as far as like, you are going to be overwhelmed at the beginning. Like it gives you a solid footing to say, okay, I know if I get this stuff done, at least I know I'm not having holes. I'm not having, you know, until you've done it for a year or two and you're like, okay, I understand what I need to be covering. I understand, you know, what my rhythm is. And so then if I want to do X, Y, or Z, you know, I have a solid footing from which I'm going to make that decision.
And you get faster. Mm-hmm. You do get more efficient the longer you teach.
Because it sounds like what you're saying is part of educating your students is educating yourself first. And that doesn't, it doesn't sound like that stops just with third grade and Farmer Boy. You'd also have to be reading Dante with your high schoolers before they, so that you can interact with it.
Right. But that's, it's hard to get all that in, especially if you've got multiple children. It's really, I couldn't read it all. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get it all done. There was no way. And I only had two children. So I can't imagine if you've got, you know, a lot. But the advantage to having more than two is you get to teach each thing more than twice.
Right.
And so you're really going to learn it. Mm-hmm. And so then you can concentrate on that older student. But it's hard to find the time to do.
Well, and, but I also do think, I mean, like, you know, if you're starting your first oldest child, then, you know, you may have time to like read through the books that they're going to read that year or do some of that, a lot more prep work for that. But really you're learning how to teach by doing it in a homeschool.
Yes.
I mean, that's my wife would definitely say that. And, you know, so if you've got that first child, you got the summer to prepare, that's great. Use it for that purpose. And then, you probably will need to do that for your first child again next year when the readings are different. Mm-hmm. But then the kids coming up, you've already done some of that work.
Yeah, right.
Right. So that will help you out. But I'll tell you, a lot of this is confidence building because homeschooling mothers have this inferiority complex and they think, well, I've never been trained to be a teacher. To which my response is, great, that's good. Because, you know, teacher training right now is so upside down in terms of their priorities and their philosophy. It's one of the things I'm going to talk about in my classes. And they don't realize it. I mean, it's like Tanya said, you know, that third of the kids in the local schools couldn't read. This is going on all over the country. Kids are not learning how to read. They're not learning math skills. A homeschooling mother can do a better job than that. And so a lot of it, and it doesn't help if you don't have the support. You know, my wife did not have the support of her parents. Hmm. And this was hard for her.
That's why you have to know why you're doing it.
You have to know why you're doing it.
You've got to be confident in the fact that you know what's best for your children and you know that you are giving them that. And then when, because it's hard when family isn't in support.
Well, particularly when you come from a family of teachers. Mm-hmm. And they remember when schools weren't as bad as
that's
they are
right.
now. And so they can't
imagine what they actually are today.
Right. There was no such thing as homeschooling. That would have been just a criminal or something. Mm. So, you know, you have that. And I'm sure that the current generation of parents of young children probably are past that now. But still, there's a lot of attitudes, particularly when your parents did go to public schools all the way through, you know, it's just going to be a different mentality. Mm-hmm.
And to help someone kind of resource themselves when it comes to understanding why they're doing it or exploring the defense for classical education. I know you mentioned Climbing Parnassus. Is there any other resource?
Well, that's for a classical education, if you're doing a classical education, which we hope you are. but even, you know, we're in the middle of homeschool convention season. Mm-hmm. That's a great place to go to figure out why you're doing what you're doing, to meet with other people doing it, to go to workshops and actually listen to people talking about it. I do think that's a great option. The Memorial College, like his classes this summer, that's what they're aimed at, is figuring out how to do it, why you're doing it.
I also think for like very practical help, the forum is, the Morning Press forum is very helpful because you can just get on there and say, hey, I'm a new homeschooler. You know, I'm looking at starting kindergarten. You know, what are the big things that you wish you'd done better, you know, your first year?
That's right.
And you would get a slew of moms that would tell you, this is what I found, you know, I wish I would have done better, or this is what really helped me. Because I just remember looking at some of those and going, wow, like the organization some of these ladies have to keep the household running while they're, you know, having to go from child to child. Like they really have some great systems.
They do.
And they will share all of that information with you if you ask.
And they'll also tell you it's the hardest thing they've ever done, but that it's absolutely worth doing. And so you could get a lot of help from your peers. Mm-hmm. if you ask for it. And people would be so glad to help. They're always so glad to help. I feel like they help each other so much more than we can help because they're all in the trenches together.
And I think you mentioned the conventions. And of course, we display at a lot of these conventions. We have a booth there. And I think people learn a lot by walking into the booth and they're able to see the entire, you know, all of our material. And there's usually somebody to talk to. We send our CSRs there. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very helpful. And going to some of these sessions, I mean, I've been speaking at those for 20, 25 years now. And I have these families now who, the one family came up and they had four kids. And she said, our last one is graduating. We've been coming to these, to see your sessions for all, you know, 20 years or something. And they've learned with Memoria Press and they're graduating and it's just wonderful. And that
is nice. Yeah. We do see the same people year after year at the conventions we attend. And we develop real relationships. And it's amazing when you just see somebody once a year, you know, as soon as you see them coming and you think, I know you.
Outside of the academic preparation and kind of curation that the parent does, can you speak to how they can curate the environment and how that factors into... Because I'm imagining the forum is probably a great place for people to talk about how they structure their days, the rhythm of family life.
Mm-hmm. I could get on a soapbox about this too. I think that the thing you have to realize when you're homeschooling is that this is your job. Mm. You just cannot imagine the number of friends who would call and ask me to babysit for them. During my school day with my kids, it was like, because we were home, I don't know what they thought I was doing, but they obviously didn't think I was teaching. And so, you know, you feel like you're, of course, now more people are homeschooling and maybe people have a better, I knew one other person in my community who was homeschooling. Everybody else was in that school where students weren't learning to read. But, it can be isolating, but it is your job. Mm-hmm. And these children are your students. And so, you know, you're not going to get your laundry done. You're going to have to advance plan for dinner and really try to be organized I feel like you need to start school at a certain time and obviously take a lunch break. Take breaks, have all that built in, just like if you were a classroom teacher, because it is important. It's the most important thing that you're doing, and it needs to be structured. I think you need an area that is uncluttered and walls that are simple and not chaotic.
And when they say, can I go up to my room to do my homework? The answer is always
absolutely no.
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 Yeah. That ain't happening.
Yeah, I'm not.
We got it done when I was a kid.
In your bedroom?
I remember laying on a bed next to my sister and we were both actually working on our homework. Maybe that was the one time and it stuck in my memory, but I remember doing it.
That would not have happened in my house.
But I think a lot of homeschoolers, because I do remember like the instruction my mother gave happened around the dining room table.
Mm, yes.
Right? And that's a lot. It's very common for homeschoolers. That's like, that's the space you have, right?
It's hard because that may be the table where you just had breakfast and you were a parent. And then all of a sudden you're a teacher. Mm-hmm. And so it is a different dynamic. It has to be a different dynamic.
To switch gears
and to turn that kitchen table into a classroom. Mm-hmm.
But to really delineate your time. Mm-hmm. This is school time and this is not school time. And I think the more you do that, the better off you are. And don't, like in the morning, they have more energy, you know. we would do math in the morning if there was some
Latin
kind of
in the morning.
Or Latin in the morning. And go for 2 hours, maybe 3 hours, and then take a lunch break. Mm-hmm. And then come back in the afternoon and maybe go for another hour or an hour and a half, a shorter period of time. And then you stop and they can go out and play in the creek or, you know, what my kids did.
Or whatever. Like my oldest, I could be cooking dinner at 5 and he's still working because he just chose to make his work last for 8 hours.
Yeah, well, that's true too. Yeah.
Four.
Yeah, there's a certain amount they got to get done. And if, if they don't do it the way they're supposed to, then it's going to take longer. And that's a disincentive.
And I remember oftentimes being done by lunchtime because I mean, I have two sisters, you know, I'm the youngest. And so it was just, if you're just organized and motivated about what you're getting done.
Motivated. There's the key.
Yeah. Right. I mean, the student has to be motivated. The parent has to be motivated, right? Like, but if you're just motivated, like, okay, we're going to get done. We're going to get our work done. Then it doesn't have to be the length of a school day.
Right.
You know, now as the kids get into high school and stuff, there'll be a whole lot more that they've got to be working on, and it will lengthen. But I was homeschooled through fifth grade. And I mean, I just remember just waiting on my neighbor to come home from school to have somebody to play with. And I'm like, why is it 4 o'clock and he's still not home?
Well, and this is the dirty little secret with a lot of schools is that very little of the time is actually academic time. I mean, I've seen some scary figures in regard to that. Now, that's not true here at Highlands. I mean, we really use our time well. It's very organized. It's very orderly. But in public schools, the amount of time that they spend on academics is not great. Mm-hmm. And so if you've spent, I mean, don't feel guilty if you only spent 3 hours that day, because you can, if you as do that, you do it well.
Especially with younger children, you can absolutely get it done. Right. Mm-hmm. And once you've gotten it done, then you should feel done and not think, well, we have three more hours. You should know every day, this is what we have to get done. Mm-hmm. And then they work until they get that done. And then that, and as long as that's clear cut, like it was for you, it was for my children too. I just had one that continually chose not to get it done. And I still don't really understand that, because he loves free time. but he just was not motivated. And I was so motivated that I didn't really know what to do with that. So, you know, because I'm such a task-oriented person, and I'm just, I love checking off boxes. And I was like, had this pencil twirler that I just don't know even where that came from.
You mean the student was a pencil twirler?
So Nick.
Okay.
Yes, he would just sit there and twirl his pencil and look into space. And if you are, you know, you can be done. You're a rational being. You should understand this is your list. When you check these things off, you're finished. And I will leave you alone. You can do whatever you want to the rest of the day.
I felt many times that we did not have rational beings. Yeah, and I think that also the breaks and the frequency of breaks. And again, you need to have them more as the day goes on, because they're getting tireder.
Right.
But those are delineated. Stop what you're doing. Do something else.
Right. Set a timer for 15 minutes.
That's right.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Exactly. But you know what we did, my husband would come home for lunch a lot of the time. Whenever he could. And so the boys and I would have been at it from, say, 8 to 11. And we were so tired of each other that when we got to be lunchtime, Dave would say, where are the boys? And I would say, I just told them to go eat. Just they're eating together. You and I are going to eat together. Like, we literally just had to separate. And then after lunch, I got it all cleaned up and we came back together and we finished our school day. But, and you know, at that time there was so much about, you know, families are falling apart because they're not eating together. And I'm like, they don't understand. We have been together literally for hours and we are all sick of each other. Yeah. I'm sick of them. They're sick of me. Mm-hmm. And so we all needed a break. And then we did much better, but we literally did not eat lunch together.
Yeah. But finding those rhythms of like what works for your family, I think is very important.
Yes.
I mean, the thing that is coming to my mind is just with these two girls we have in our home, getting them to change from pajamas to clothes for school, right? They're not being homeschooled. They're going to the local school. But that was such a battle every morning. Mm. I mean, they're 5 and 7 and like, you know, just, I don't want to change. You know, I don't like those clothes, you know? And so we ended up going on vacation and they stayed with another family for a week and they came back and the family's like, oh yeah, we do up clothes at night. And I was like, what are up clothes? And up clothes are the clothes you wear when you get up. But instead of wearing pajamas, like you're 5 years old, you can sleep in that dress. Like you could, you know, you could sleep in that, you know, those pants and that shirt. And like it completely changed our rhythm in a very good way. Whereas, okay, now instead of getting up and fighting that battle, we get up and we're able to have a nice breakfast and we're, you know, ready to roll. And so you just got to find that rhythm that's going to work. Like that was a battle that those kids, for whatever reason, really struggle with. Okay.
We just sidestepped the battle. I've never heard of doing that before.
Oh, yeah. It completely changed our lives. Huh. But you got to find that rhythm, right?
That's
and
right.
Like I remember when I was a kid, you know, yeah, we'd have to get up, we'd change, you know, mom often tried actually, because she tried to take us to daily mass because it was a way, I think, to get us out of the house and get us going.
That is right? A good way to keep your schedule.
Mm-hmm. And so you just got to find whatever that's going to be and do that.
Yeah. But yeah. Is it possible to be over-involved as a parent?
I think, are you saying
Martin?
Yes? Are you saying what? Yes?
Yes. Well, I mean, it on the stuff where we've just been talking about, no, but I mean, because what your question makes me think about, it may not be what you're asking about, is just this management of your child's entire life and exactly what sport they're going to play and all this stuff. And then you're going to go to every single soccer game and they're going to college and getting a scholarship, which they never get, and all this kind of stuff. And I don't know where I was reading this. We were talking about just free play when kids were able to go out and do our boys would disappear. There's a creek that ran through the backyard, a fairly large creek. They would disappear. We wouldn't see them for half a day. We did not worry about
them. It's a wonder
they
didn't drown.
That's the attitude. If you go back just another generation, when I was growing up, we lived like 3 miles from the beach. I'd get on my bicycle and ride to the beach. And my mother didn't worry about me.
No, Dave's mom, and they would go camping for days. She wouldn't see them for days in the summer.
Oh yeah. And so I think that it was our expectations different. Have completely changed in that regard. And now we're these helicopter parents who dictate every minute of our child's lives. Mm-hmm. And I have seen the consequences of this, and it's not good. You know, maybe a free range is not the way to do it either. Maybe that's the other extreme, but we've got to find a balance between just neglecting our children and over managing every aspect of their lives.
And I think that also, like, the development of the child also goes into that, mm-hmm. right? Like when the child's getting older, how many more choices are you allowing them to make? Mm-hmm. Right? Like you have to also have to think about what is the age of this child? What should this child be allowed to choose and what should they not be allowed to choose? Mm-hmm. And you know, yeah, you do have a place as a parent to tell your child, you have to read Dante, you know, like you're in high school, you don't get a choice, right? But at the same time, it's okay if the child says, look, I want to spend more time reading Dante in the fall. So that way in the spring, I can dedicate more time to something else, right? Like where they may be able to shift how this is happening, right? And so you just have to like work through with your mm-hmm. with your child, like where you start to give them some choices, but you have the essentials that they can't.
Yeah, one night I'm sitting there at the dinner table. It's after dinner, dishes are cleared away, and I could tell there was something on my wife's mind, you know. And she says, "Dear, do you realize that the boys were swinging on a tire swing over the Kentucky River last Saturday night?" And I said, "No, I didn't realize that." And then I went on doing what I was doing. "Are you not upset that they were swinging on the rope swing?" I just said, "Dear, this is what they do."
Oh man.
Sounds like fun.
Sounds like a fun evening in your home. Choice.
And you know, and that's the other issue is, are your standards the same as your spouse's?
No. I mean, generally no. Not when it comes to child rearing, generally they're a little different. Yes.
But I do think too that a lot of times for homeschool parents, they're not involved enough. I totally agree with you, but also I think there's this feeling, and I had it when my children got old, like fifth grade, sixth grade, I was thinking, okay, you should be independent now. I should be done. And that's not true. That's not how it, did not work for me. And it's a false idea because you still are their teacher. And at home, it's different in the classroom. If you're preparing, you know, if I said, like when my kids were in a classical studies class, and I could say, so have you read that book in the Iliad you were supposed to read? But if I'm the homeschool parent, I need to be able, somebody's got to be talking to them. Mm-hmm. about their schoolwork and mm-hmm. what they've done. Even if you don't have time to read it, you should at least have the teacher guide and generate some kind of conversation, because it's not fair for them not to be able to talk about what they've read.
That expression is a huge part of learning, right?
It is.
Them be able to
and
say,
so,
this is what I've learned.
As a homeschooler, you're taking that on. Mm-hmm. You're taking on that responsibility for being involved mm-hmm. in their daily life, daily education.
Martin, before you say anything, I was just gonna say, like, we see this in Memoir Academy too. Mm. What Tanya's saying is that parents aren't involved enough, because the thought with any sort of hybrid program, right, as the parent is
that you're in partnership.
But from the parent's perspective, they say, I'm farming this out.
Right.
Right. But right. from the hybrid school's perspective, this is a partnership, right? You're only, this child's only with us 1 or 2 days a week, which means You as a parent, you need to also be involved, right? And the moment that you completely say, oh, no, that's, I'm not doing that because that's over here, this class is doing that, it's the moment that your child's not going to be getting out of it what they really could be.
Right.
Because you may just have a child like your son that's not motivated, not getting the work done. And if the parent's not following up on that, the work's not going to get done. They can't get out of class what they need to get out of it. And all of those sorts of issues pop up. We do see that a lot. Mm-hmm. But honestly, I mean, sometimes it's just the human frailty of not having enough hours in our day.
Right.
Well, and this is particularly important in literature, primarily, and literature secondarily. And I think this is one of the reasons, it's a great role for father, is communal reading with your family. Mm. And we did this after dinner. We would push away the dinner dishes and my wife would be, you know, getting the dessert or something. And I would start into the next chapter of some chapter book that we were all reading. We were all reading it together. And what that does, and I see it with my grandkids now too, is it creates this, these metaphors that get into conversations that you're giving. And some child will say, well, that's just like so-and-so in that story and that sort of thing. And I think if you can, and that's totally natural. It's just, you're doing this thing together, you're reading it together, and it just makes its way into your mind and into your consciousness. And I mean, they were reading, my grandkids were reading The Wind in the Willows. And so everything became about the wind. This was the controlling metaphor in the family. And there's been false charges about my driving. So I get, deemed Mr. Toad, you know, my grandkids, you're Mr. Toad, you know. And this sort of thing, but that's where I think you need to get in all this, particularly with the literature. So that it's because the literature books, imagined fiction, are systems of meaning, and the fact that it relates to something in a story gives it even greater meaning than it had just the thing without being able to think of it in another context. You know,
Martin, can I ask what age did you start doing that around the dining room table?
Well, because this is the issue, because probably when they were very young, when the oldest was 5 or 6.
Okay.
And so what you had to do, because, you know, some books would be too old for the younger kids and some would be too young for the older kids. Although if it's a classic, it doesn't matter.
Right.
That's the thing. I mean, you could read, you know, my 16-year-old son, you know, we read till they left home, and then I read to my wife after they left. Right. So my youngest comes home, Tim, and he's still home, and you know, we're reading P.G. Woodhouse, we're reading Booth Tarkington, right. we're reading, and I said, because I needed to read Farmer Boy, and I needed to go, so I said, we're going to read Farmer Boy. Said, I am not listening to a book that is for kids. I know. I said, we're reading Farmer Boy, chapter one, you know, and then I would start in reading, and then I'd get finished, and he'd say, well, you can read another chapter if you want to, you know, because that's a great interested. Book, and that's it doesn't right. matter what age it that's is, right. but you do, you try to, you know, we had four kids, so I tried to put it right in the middle in terms of the reading level. Mm-hmm. And the reading level also is always younger than the, when you're reading it, than what it would be if they had to read it themselves. You can mm-hmm. you can read sure. to a younger child who couldn't read it themselves.
Right.
That's about 2 years or so, maybe, I think. But that communal reading was extremely important in our family. Mm. My wife would say that is one of the best things we did in homeschooling.
Yeah.
Mm. Were you going to say, Paul?
Nothing. No. I was curious when he was doing this because yeah. we have a little bit of work to do.
Mm. Yeah.
No, well, start and it anytime.
Becomes, you know, at first it may not be easy and they may not want to pay attention or whatever, but then it becomes a ritual.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, why aren't we reading?
Right.
If you don't do it.
Right.
It's just habit. You know, so much education is habit formation. Mm-hmm. And that's just another habit you need to form is listening yeah. at the time when everybody listens. You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And doing it, I mean, we have a habit of reading stories at bedtime, which is good. It mm-hmm. gets them. Yes,
absolutely.
But
and that's another.
But doing it. At a time where they're up and awake and have to focus on the pictures and all that kind of
that
stuff.
Is
even, for,
nice.
Even for kids that, like these kids at our home, they're going to school, right? But still having that dedicated time, that would be nice.
Yeah. And right a picture dinner. Book after dinner, everybody's still sitting around
well,
the table.
We had a lot of work to do just to get them to sit at the table.
Yeah.
Right. Now we're sitting yeah. at the table. So well, maybe we might be able to up it, you know, now. Just,
a picture
that's
book might
curious.
Help.
It might. We'll see.
You can report back.
We have some great read alouds I can suggest.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And our books that we use in our curriculum, those four or five books we do every year in our literature program, those are perfect for this kind of thing. Mm. And even mm-hmm. if they're, even if they're studying them, to hear them is a different mm-hmm. experience yes. for them.
That's right.
Yeah. And if you've read it to them a couple of years before mm-hmm. they get to it,
yes.
then they get to dive into it when right. they that's dig right. through it carefully.
That's That's a great note to end on, thinking about reading around the dinner table as your parental involvement. It's not just during the day at wherever your classroom is at home. It can be anywhere. That's great. Well, thanks for joining us today. You can find those read aloud books or any of our sets at memoriapress.com. We'll see you next time. Thank you for joining us today on Classical Etc. by Memoria Press. If you like what you heard, you can follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. To learn more about Memoria Press, please go to memoriapress.com. This has been Classical Etc. We're so glad you joined us, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the Memoria Press Podcast Network, providing a classical Christian perspective on the world of education. To learn more about Memoria Press, visit us at memoriapress.com. To connect with us, find us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.